This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bombastic, audacious, revolutionary, rash, outraged, organised. Assertive activist days.
Broad.
On Joy 94.9.
Broad Incorporated presents Films for Feminists. Is this a love of cinema gone mad? Is this the impossible dream of finding films that represent women and girls in a way most intelligent, most equal, most inclusive and intersectional? Is this feminism on film? With Sonia Hammer, who stars as a woman who lives for the impossible dream of a world of cinema where women are paid equally to men. Is this just fantasy? A film fantasy? No, it's real. Uncovering old and new films for women and girls about women and girls. Listen to us Monday nights on Broad. Films for Feminists on Joy 94.9.
Yeah, I think whatever it takes, I think that sometimes it needs some intervention to redress the balance because we have to sort of train up the next generation coming through and give young women a chance to develop their, you know, themselves as filmmakers and for it to be a more equal playing ground. And, you know, if it takes some kind of engineering to achieve that for a while, then I think that's fine.
Important, yeah.
It wouldn't be forever, but I think it sometimes takes that to just like shake things up and give women a chance.
This first term is a physical and emotional undoing. That you will be forced to unlearn everything that you've ever learned. That you will break. So what happens here?
And what can you do to minimize the damage?
It's in my bones, it's in my skin.
Acting's hard work, Stanley. You have to earn my respect.
My sister had this weird thing where she slept with her coach.
I was the one who caught them.
Was he, like, forcing her?
Not at all. She wanted it.
Is that the tennis girl?
I think it's current, generational, sex, power.
Why did you choose the tennis scandal story?
I know her sister.
What? That's crazy. How come?
Man with a secret.
When are you going to tell your girlfriend?
It's all about how badly you want it.
She changed his mind.
You have to go all the way, all the time. If you pull back even a little, you just disappoint yourself.
I'm Sonia from Abroad on Joy 94.9, speaking to Alison McLean, director of the film The Rehearsal, which is having only a limited run at this stage at the ACMI from January 18th to February the 6th. So yes, welcome to Broad.
Thanks, hi.
Excellent. So speaking to us, you're in New York at the moment?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn, yeah.
Of course, the great thing too for this film of yours, it's going to have a special Q&A video, I believe, video conferencing on Wednesday the 18th of Jan. That's the plan. Before the film or after the film? Or I guess after the film.
I guess after. I'm assuming it's after.
Yeah, I would presume that would be...
Speak about it after, yeah.
That would be the logic. Of course, that's part of She Speaks First, which is a great female-focused film series. So part of Grey Gardens project. But let's talk about the film, Alison. Can you briefly tell us, obviously without spoiling it too much, what the rehearsal is all about.
Yeah, it's a story about a group of kids, first-year students at drama school in New Zealand, in Auckland. And in particular, it follows a young Maori guy who arrives at school, feels very much out of his depth. Eventually, you know, it follows his sort of navigating the year with the other students and a somewhat ferocious acting teacher, and into a kind of first love affair with a young girl who's 15, and he ends up sort of ending up in a kind of morally tricky situation when he kind of uses a sex scandal involving her sister, his oldest sister, as material for this end-of-year show that the students are doing.
Yeah, so they're basically using that true life story to build their overall end of the year project or something to
I mean, obviously they're doing their own interpretation of it, but it sort of gets him into this sort of ethically, you know, tricky situation where he's torn between his ambition really and then his kind of sense of loyalty to his girlfriend.
Interesting film. Now, it's based on the book Eleanor Akaton, the Booker Prize winning author of the novel The Rehearsal. What interested you in adapting this particular story into doing it into a film?
I was really quite knocked out by the book. It's very audacious, very bold female voice. And I like the themes of it, which, you know, have to do with learning to become an actor, but also it looks at sort of performance in life and just sort of a point, kids at a point of transition when they're sort of trying out possible selves in a way, different versions of themselves. And I also like the sort of power dynamics that the book explores, you know, between teachers and students and between, well, in the case of the book, it's saxophone players, but we turn them into tennis players and their coach. So, and, you know, parents and kids. So there's a lot about the sort of power dynamics and how they can change. That was quite fascinating to me.
I'm lucky to have seen it. So, yes, and it's still got that really strong sort of Kiwi sensibility as well, quite grounded, very matter-of-fact sort of acting style, actually, too, with James Rolleston is excellent as Stanley, the lead actor in this production. So was that a deliberate thing, or was it just him and the way he performs, bringing that to that role, very,
you know,
understated?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much him, and I mean, I was drawn to cast him because I think he just comes from a very true place, and he wasn't trained as an actor. He's instinctive, you know, and he just kind of draws on himself and his experiences in a very sort of organic, quite private way. Mm. And, you know, given that the film is so much about, in a way, quite precocious at times, young actors, it seemed important that this guy who's the lead should be just very authentic and not be trying too hard, not be clever, and just someone who's just, in a way, quite strict and simple and honest in what he's doing. Mm. And, I mean, James really did that, because I really felt that he was going through what the character is going through, and that was important to make the film work.
Mm. Now, I've read somewhere online your work and the characters that you have in it have been described as idiosyncratic loners. There seems to be that through the body of work that you've done. Why do you choose those sort of characters? Because they do sort of stand out to be quite individualistic and lonely.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. I guess some of myself in that when I was young, I was tended to be the kind of, you know, as more of an observer, just standing a bit more on the sidelines and a little, you know, just naturally a little bit more of a kind of introverted person. Yeah, I guess that's why.
Okay, yeah, I understand. Now, for a lot of our listeners and for, let's face it, myself, big fan, of course, looking at your background and body of work there. Of course, it's for me and I guess a lot of people would be Kitchen Sink. From 1989 would be the short film that just blew everybody away, basically. It's been a long time since then. Do you still get a lot of questions like this one about the inspiration of that short film and how important it is?
Yeah, I mean, that was... Yeah, it's sort of had an extraordinary life, really. It was honestly a slightly mysterious process whereby there was an assignment, in a way, that the Film Commission New Zealand were calling for ideas for a 13-minute short film, set budget, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And I was trying to think of something that would happen to someone, probably a woman, alone at home. And I thought of the hair, and it's just one of those strange things that doesn't happen very often, where it just kind of unraveled in my mind and sort of became what it was, you know, quite quickly. I thought of the whole thing except for the ending. The ending took about 3 months to think about, to come up with. But, you know, I was sort of inspired by a film like Cronenberg's The Fly, that was sort of a love story and a kind of horror film.
Yeah.
I also wanted to do something, and it's sort of a Pygmalion story too, but I wanted to do a film that was silent, that had almost no dialogue. So it was also a little bit of an exercise in trying to come up with a story that had almost no talking.
Yeah, no, I watched it again. I haven't watched it for many years, but it's still really stark, and it's that lack of sound is quite deafening, apart from the gurgling and squishy sink sounds. And I believe the headless chickens I could hear in the background. So
yes,
the band, yeah,
they
is.
Came up with a lovely, wonderful track. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Million Dollar Dream. So, I mean, it's such an important part of Kiwiana, that film. Now, Crush, of course, is the other one, 1992, looking at your career. And that was also something that broke the mould, I think, for storytelling made in New Zealand. I haven't really lived that down because of, I guess, we're a queer radio station, so having those sorts of themes and LGBTQ themes and things in a film, it's still a rare thing, you know, to have those stories.
Mm. Yeah, I was just going to say, it probably was unusual for that time. Yeah, I agree.
Now, going again, looking through the Jesus' Son, that was just working with some amazing people like Holly Hunter and the wonderful late Dennis Hopper. Do you get to choosing and to work with people like that, artists like that? Or
It's a little bit hit and miss. I mean, we spent a long time casting that film, and actors came in different ways, and sometimes it would be completely unexpected, like Holly, for example, knew someone that was auditioning for another part, and she met Dennis Johnson. She just read it off her own bat and kind of came to us and said she was interested. So, I mean, that doesn't often happen. Dennis Hopper, we sent it to him, and he just read his scene. He didn't read anything else and liked the scene and said yes. So, and then there were people like Jack Black and Michael Shannon who have, you know, gone on to, you know, have big careers, but that was right at the very beginning before they were very well known. So I feel like we were very lucky with the cast we had with that film. A lot of really exceptional actors.
Yeah, it's a great film, of course. And then moving on and doing some TV work and stuff like that. But I found out something about you I had no idea, and that was your part of Natalie Imbruglia's fantastic song "Torn." That was very exciting.
Torn.
Yeah, to know that you were a part of that.
Yeah. That was also just I didn't even really know her work that well, but somehow that came to me, and I was asked to come up with an idea, and I was thinking about when you're on set making a film, you know, that there's always a monitor that you end up, as a director, you end up just staring at this monitor for hours every day, and the monitor is often showing, you know, all the in-between moments, and so you're often seeing all kinds of stuff passing through that frame that doesn't end up getting filmed. So I just decided to use that idea of a kind of fixed camera monitor and just cutting together all the things that happen in between and behind the scenes moments, and that was a really kind of fun, charmed experience making that video.
Yeah, well, one of the biggest...
It turned out much better than I expected, yeah.
Like,
but of course it was a hit song.
Oh, huge,
so,
yeah. It's like a really lovely happenstance, you know. And you almost kind of, sounds like you think these things happen by surprise or something, as far as your work goes, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, now and then, I find it usually isn't this way, but now and then, you know, since the stars will align, and I love it when that happens, where it's just the combination of people involved. I don't know, sort of an idea and circumstances and various talents and various things just seem to align and it just something becomes bigger than you expected. I love it when that happens, but it's actually quite rare. And that was one of those times, I would say. I mean, you hope that it'll be like that every time, but it really isn't.
Yeah, because you've got such a...
Sometimes it's a lot more work.
Yeah. You've got such a span of work over such a period of time. And I was reading an article from TIFF from last September, the Toronto International Film Festival, where the rehearsal are screened. And the interviewer talked about, you know, being a female director, being a woman director, is that important? And do you think it is difficult, you know, break into the industry or your own experience?
I do think it's very important. I think it's insane that there's such a disparity still after, you know, that there's such a kind of disproportionately few female directors. I think that's really insane and it drives me kind of crazy. And I think that that subjectivity, that point of view is incredibly important. And it's not, I mean, I think it's, a woman can make films about anything, about men, but I think you just need female creators because they come from a, you know, unique, they have a unique point of view. I mean, it's individual, but it just has to be more balanced. And I do find on a daily basis that there's just a kind of implicit bias there, and it's very hard to rise above that. And the, you know, I really feel the people are less inclined to give you the benefit of the doubt as a woman. I mean, I think even without people acknowledging, that would be a reason why they might say no or be less inclined to say yes. But I think it's operating, and it's just enormously frustrating.
Yeah, I think you're right there. It's although in Australia they are trying some different things here, of course, with the Screen Australia Gender Matters program. I'm hoping that it gets extended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are your thoughts about something like that in place?
Yeah, I think whatever it takes. I think that sometimes it needs some intervention to redress the balance because we have to sort of train up the next generation coming through and give young women a chance to develop their, you know, themselves as filmmakers and for it to be a more equal playing ground. And, you know, if it takes some kind of engineering to achieve that for a while, then I think that's fine.
Important, yeah.
It wouldn't be forever, but I think it sometimes takes that to just like shake things up and give women a chance.
Exactly. I mean, I agree. Some people would say, well, won't it mean you'll get less quality? And I think that's not really the point. That's not how it will work.
No, I don't think it's true if you look at a country like France, where it's a little more balanced than America. I mean, there's just, you know, huge number of talented women directors there. So
yes, yeah, I interviewed one fantastic film I've seen. I don't know if you've seen it, called Raw, R-A-W.
No, I don't know that film.
By Julia Ducournau. People in the audience. I think it was at TIFF, and people in the audience. Was it at Cannes? Fainted. They had to get an ambulance because.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's about. Well, it has themes of cannibalism in it and female coming of age. I think you might find it. I don't know. Enjoyable is the word, but interesting. So
I'll look it up.
Did really well. Now the other thing is, as far as influences go, for women directors, do you have anyone in mind that, you know, really stands out and you go, wow, I wish, you know, I could come up with something like that or just adore their films?
Yeah, I mean, the last time I felt that was seeing Tony Erdman.
Maren Arde's film?
Yeah. Her name's Marinada,
yep.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just really knocked out by that film. I just thought it was so masterful and so original and ambitious. And she just did exactly what she wanted to do. It just was made with complete authority and hilarious. And so I really admired that film very much. And I've always admired Claire Denis. That's another woman I've admired. And also Andrea Arnold. She's fantastic. And Jane Campion. She's, you know, in a more personal way, she's been inspiring to me. For a long time.
Yes, she has inspired a lot of people, and well, you've worked now with her daughter, so that must have been quite interesting.
Brilliant. Yeah,
she's very talented.
Yeah, she's very, very talented. Yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah. Did she seek you out to play the role, or she just auditioned like anyone else?
No, she didn't audition, and I knew her through Jane. I've sort of known her off and on for quite a long time, so I approached her, and she said yes. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. It's good when they can do that. Now, speaking of Kiwis, speaking of New Zealand films and things like that, I guess you do get claimed by New Zealand, but also Canada. Where do you fall on that, and does that matter, or, you know, do you think of yourself as a New Zealand director or Canadian?
I don't know that it's a matter of choosing. I haven't made a film in Canada, so so that's a little different, you know. Mm. I mean, I worked on a television show there called Michael Tuesdays and Thursdays a few years ago, but that's really the only Canadian work that I've done, and the rest has been New Zealand or America.
Yes.
So, I mean, in terms of where I guess, sort of sense of where I come from, it would be New Zealand.
Yes, yes. Is it because of the work that you find more opportunities, I guess, or, you know, chances to do things? Is that why you live in the U.S., or would that be a matter of choice?
Yeah, partly personal reasons, partly because I like working in a bigger arena. I mean, I'm inspired by living in New York still, and, you know, I feel there are possibilities. I mean, in reality, it's actually very hard to make films here because obviously there's no, you know, government support, and so you're sort of at the mercy of the market, which is pretty ruthless. you know, just keep working away and hope. You know, it'll get easier after having made another film. You know, it gets harder when there's sort of a big gap between films. Mm. I think
because you have had quite a bit of a gap, I guess, for your own work and career. Which brings me to what happens to the rehearsal? Like, it's doing the rounds and, you know, some of the festivals since last year. What will happen to it?
Yeah, it's doing some festivals and still trying to get distribution here, which is not so easy without big movie stars.
Yes.
So that, you know, that becomes its own challenge. But, you know, I'm confident that it'll find its an audience and find a way to get out there. It just takes a little bit of time.
Mm. Well, it is a beautiful film. And Keri Fox, once again, I just want to see her more and more on the screen.
You know, she's fantastic. She's ferocious.
Yeah, she is.
So good.
She must have enjoyed.
She's strong.
Did she enjoy the character? Did she? Because it's quite.
I think so. And I mean, she just had so much. She brought so much experience to the part because she's obviously been an actor for years. She's also taught. She's worked with so many different directors. So she could just sort of tap into. You know, every part of that role, it was really quite delicious working with her. And she's very funny. She just sort of no holds barred. She just sort of comes out with things and in a very, you know, blunt, forceful, surprising way. And she's very funny and very strong. And she just has such authority. So she's really perfect for it.
Well, Angel at My Table and, of course, Shallow Grave, just brilliant performances in both.
Yeah, she's so good,
and so different from each other. Well, I should wrap it up because I'm talking a lot and asked you a lot of questions, but I did want to ask a favor, because we are a feminist show abroad on Joy 94.9, and so I always ask a feminist question, if that's okay.
Sure.
And that is, do you consider yourself a feminist? And what does that mean, do you think, to yourself?
Yeah, I don't necessarily use the word a lot, but I do. I mean, I do consider myself a feminist, yes. And, you know, I think that means for me, it's about... you know, it's about supporting other women. It's about, you know, standing in my being a woman and being proud of that and exploring that, because that's what excites me, you know, in making films and in my work is just standing in who I am, and a big part of who I am is a woman. And also just changing the balance of power in this, you know, in this world, because it's a little too skewed towards men, and that really has to change for so many reasons.
Yes, I agree. And in you know, film culture and things, yeah, it needs to still. So that's great. Now, before I let you go, I wonder if you could do a last favor, and that is do a station ID for us, or a show ID.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so the name of the show is Broad, as in Broad and Broads, you know. And our station.
As in Broad?
Yes, Broad, yeah. B-R-O-A-D, okay. Yep. And it's on Joy 94.9.
Okay.
When you're ready, thanks.
I'm Alison Okay, you ready?
yeah, cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm Alison McLean, and this is Broad on Joy 95. Sorry, you have to tell me that again.
94.9.
Okay, 94.9. I'll try that again.
Okay, thanks.
This is Alison McLean, and... Sorry, I'll say it again. I'm Alison McLean, and this is Broad on Joy 94.9 FM.
Perfect. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. And good luck with the rehearsal and everything. I love the film. I'd like to see it as a television series, to be quite honest.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Something for Netflix.
Well, thank you so much. It's been nice to talk to you.
Yes. Thanks, Alison, and good luck. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Excellent. That was Alison McLean, Kiwi-Canadian filmmaker, who now based in New York, where obviously she loves the town, and who wouldn't, and talking about her film The Rehearsal, talking also about, well, that's her new film, Kitchen Sink, looking back in the past there at her wonderful amount of work, Jesus's Son, Torn, the Natalie Imbruglia video which she made, and Crush, and many, many other things, including the experience of being a woman and feminism and what it means to her. So we wish her all the best of luck with her film, The Rehearsal, and don't forget to catch it playing for a limited time at the ACMI here in Melbourne. If you live in Melbourne, it's running from the 18th of January to February the 6th with a very special opening night, which will have a Skype Q&A after which, and that is Wednesday the 18th of January. Thank you very much to ACMI or ACME for giving me the chance to speak to one of my most favourite of all time Kiwi directors, Alison McLean. I'm Sonia, and this is Broad on Joy 94.9.
You tell me when I can?
Okay.
Hi everyone, it's Julia Ducournau, director of Raw on Broad on Joy 94.9.
Thank you.
Behind your eyes, as I point to watch the sky, should I take this leap, or will it bury me? If only I
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.